So those of you who've tuned in for the last two Sundays, this will be a continuation of that, but I'm hoping it's a continuation at the latter part of what I want to offer today is, I'm hoping, going to be very practical, very practically oriented. But I'll start out with a bit of Buddhist teaching or Buddhist theory, or as the author in here describes it, as Buddhist philosophy. So the last two Sundays, kind of the general way of looking at it is, we've been talking about, I think any of us who kind of would take a step back from life and look at it a little bit, we're sort of noticing, so what exactly is my relationship, you know, as an individual to the rest of the world? What's going on there? How do we relate to other people, other living things, and just life in general? So again, wanted to read a few short things from the book that I was quoting a number of times last two Sundays, called Realizing Genjo Koan by Shohaku Okumura. The Genjo Koan being the first chapter of Great Master Dogen's main writing called the Shobogenzo. And Shohaku Okumura is, I think he's about 10 years older than me. He's also a Soto Zen monk. And he's Japanese, but he's been living in this country for probably 30 odd years now. So he says, the relationship between self and all beings is expressed in the philosophy of every Buddhist tradition. So any Buddhist tradition, any Buddhist practice, any Buddhist temple you go to, at some point they're going to talk about that relationship between the self and everything else. So he says, for example, early Buddhist teachers used the 12 sense fields to explain the relationship between self and all other things. So the 12 sense fields were defined as the 6 sense organs, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind, and the 6 objects of each sense organ. So sights, sound, smell, taste, touch, and objects of mind. And hopefully what I've just said there, it's like, wait a minute, we just sang all of those things in the Scripture of Great Wisdom. And Scripture of Great Wisdom is one of the earliest Buddhist teachings, and it's recited, chanted in every single Buddhist temple in the world, from what I've been told. It's from early Buddhism and is revered and regarded as the kind of the most important teaching that we have. So early Buddhist teachings about the 12 sense fields explain that our relationship with all things is created through our sense organs and their objects. Hopefully in a way it's like, well, of course. But again, it's like, how do we actually even know about and experience the world around us? So in other words, we see colors and shapes with our eyes, we hear with our ears, we smell with our noses, you know, taste with our tongues, and we sense touch with our bodies. And then objects of mind refers to memories, images, or concepts we can see or hear, in quotes, or think about without actually using our sense organs. Apparently, other types of animals, from as best we know, can't do that. All that they're aware of is what's going on, what they're sensing at any given time. There's not an ability to, in their minds, kind of, sort of, you know, like reading a book or watching a movie, you can kind of be transported there. That's actually not going on you know, physically or with kind of in your life at that moment, other than what you're watching and so on. And he has this interesting statement about the objects of mind and our mind, where he says, so what we perceive, i.e. when we're basically engaged with our minds, is actually a kind of stimulation of what happens within our bodies and minds. But we do not directly perceive the things themselves, you know, through our senses. In other words, that's not actually going on right now. I'm not actually back in, you know, 1400 England, you know, watching some PBS special or something like that. Okay, and then so that was very, very early Buddhism. Six senses. Don't have six fingers. Six senses and six sense objects. And then a little while later in Buddhism, they developed that a little bit further with what they call the 18 elements, which all of you who are mathematically and are inclined will realize, wait a minute, that's another factor of six. So the 18 elements consisted of the six sense organs, the six sense objects, as we've already talked about, and the six individual elements of consciousness associated with each sense organ. So in other words, it kind of developed it a little bit further, saying that when a sense organ contacts or meets a sense object, then you get a certain form of consciousness arising from that. So you have eye consciousness, ear consciousness, nose consciousness, taste consciousness, feel consciousness. And I think the important thing about those types of consciousness is that you can ask somebody, and if they're conscious of it, they'll say, yes, I'm feeling something right now. Like, something's sore in my body, or yes, I'm actually tasting the food I'm eating right now. So some of us who are inclined in these directions, it's like, oh, cool, six sense organs, six sense objects, six forms of consciousness, 18, and you know, it gets very kind of theoretical in a certain way. And believe me, this is the short version I've just told you all. In early Buddhist texts and so on, they really get going on all of these areas. Okay, so that's the background. I wanted to give you a little bit of sort of Buddhist history, philosophical history about the development of that. But bring it back down to the fact that what's actually being talked about is very, very straightforward. And wanted to unpack that some more today. Now, in our book group meetings, we've been discussing for a couple months now, maybe, an article that Reverend Master Hario, who was our previous head of the order, he wrote way back in 1998. Thank you. And it was originally published, this article, in our OBC journal. And what he's doing, the part we're in right now, is he's wanting to present a model of training to kind of give us. He's wanting to lay out what he's presenting as kind of what's going on for a human being. And based on that model, we can keep referring back to it to get a sense of what to do when we're in various situations in our day, in our life. So he says, the main elements of the model of training I find most helpful revolve around changing both the way we use the senses and the way we react to sensory information. And he says, I include the thinking mind and its thoughts in these two categories. So in other words, he's in a very simple, straightforward way saying that just what we were talking about there, the mind is the sixth sense organ, and mental objects are the things that the mind is aware of. So the core of what he's talking about and presenting in this article is, how do we go about working with our senses, and how do we go about reacting to what we experience through our senses? And the whole heart of it, the whole core of how we do that, is through meditation. As I did on Wednesday, what I'd like to do now is present a much more broad definition or broad explanation of meditation. Kind of come at it from a number of different directions. And basically, so meditation is being present with what one is sensing, or being present with what one is experiencing. Maybe another way of putting that is that we're actually aware of, we're actually noticing what's going on with us at any given time. A third way of putting it is that we're actually there fully within our life at any moment. It's like, yes, I'm actually right here, and yes, these are the things I'm actually experiencing, i.e. these are the things I'm seeing, these are the things I'm hearing, perhaps smelling, tasting, these are the things going on in my mind. I think that covered all of them. Feeling, yes, physical sensation. Every now and then, what's come to mind throughout my time doing this practice is, and it hasn't quite happened this way when I was in the monastery, but it happened enough times, but also to the point where I'm kind of do this to myself occasionally. It's like I imagine somebody running up to me, grabbing me by the shoulders and sort of shaking me a little bit and saying, are you here? And here meaning, are you here where your feet are standing? Are you here where you're sitting? In the sense of, are you actually there being present with and living that experience right now? And unfortunately, quite often the answer would be, not quite. But the minute that somebody sort of metaphorically grabs me by the shoulders and kind of shakes me, it's like, oh, now I am. I think it may be due to what the lower numbers of monks we have in both of our main monasteries that it's not done, and lack of novice monks, because we were, me as a novice, us as novices, we were the ones that did it. So in a monastery, you always have a first meditation in the morning, after you've used the bathroom and head off to meditation, the very first thing you do. And it's always one of the last things you do in the evening before kind of a sort of a rest time, and then you can go off to bed whenever you want. And during the beginning and ending meditation, there was this beautiful, really large bell in the ceremony hall, which is right adjacent to the monks' meditation hall. And it was a novice's job during that meditation period that unfold their mat and kneel on it or sit on a chair nearby. And every 5 minutes, they would ring the bell. Not too loud, but not too soft. So every 5 minutes, for 40 minutes, this would happen. And it was actually really helpful, because it was the same thing as, you know, having somebody come up to you and grab you by the shoulders. And particularly as a younger monk, I would realize that I was off somewhere in my head, usually, and that bell would bring me back again. Oh yeah, I'm actually physically feeling my body right now. I'm actually seeing things. I'm seeing the wall in front of me, hearing things. And so over and over again, it's the practice is to, again, as I like calling it, actually live your life. Be where you are, in the sense of experiencing, sensing what's going on right now. And that brings to mind that, and I'm assuming it's still going on, even though Thich Nhat Hanh, you know, died a little while ago, in his main monastery in southern France, every hour it's somebody's job to, they have a very, very large temple bell outdoors, and they go and they strike it on the hour. And when that happens, everyone stops, you know, puts their hands in gassho, and just, again, it's a, why are you here? What is the practice? And by that, it's the practice is just what I was mentioning. That's the core of it. You know, was I getting a little bit off somewhere? Reverend Master Jiyu, in her years in Japan, when she was given a temple out in the countryside and became the prior, what she would do is every hour is she would go and ring a gong in the ceremony hall and do that same thing. It's just a reminder again, what's the real practice? What are we wanting to try to carry throughout the day? Now, kind of unpacking the phrase about that I like asking myself, are you really living your life right now? Are you really here? It can be very, very helpful, you know, for me to this very day, but particularly in sort of the earlier years of our practice, can be very helpful that whenever we're doing something, to actually invoke or bring forth almost a little bit of extra paying attention of like, okay, now I'm picking up my notes for the talk, you know, and I'm feeling that, I'm noting that, yes, I am doing that. And there are some Buddhist practices, some schools where they actually teach you to do that, where you're mentally, now I'm, you know, it's almost like you're, well, not quite. It's so you're actually sort of narrating to yourself what exactly you're doing, with the intent that you're trying to be fully present with what's going on. So that's what recommendation number one that you can try is when you're doing, and I'll get to the various activities in a moment, but when you're doing a given activity, perfectly fine to actually kind of bring a little bit of extra awareness, a little extra mindfulness to, okay, now I'm washing the dishes. Now I'm putting clothes in the washing machine, you know, dispensing out the soap and so on. And just to clarify, I'm not saying don't have that. I mean, if you want, you can give it a try, but I don't find it necessary to actually have a running commentary in my head when I'm doing that. It's more just the attention, the focus, the awareness. Just kind of give a little extra while you're doing that. Some people, just kind of the way they're wired, tend to do that a little bit too much, a little bit too intense. But that's okay. It's actually sometimes kind of nice to see somebody like that, because then we can help them kind of sort of mellow out a little bit, relax a little bit. But I think most of us are kind of on the other side. We're a little bit kind of scattered. We're not quite fully standing in our shoes. We're kind of off here and there in our minds with, oh, what happened in the past or what's going to happen in the future. I mean, obviously, from my point of view, with all of the years I spent living in a monastery, I have that as kind of the example or the standard. But all of you eat as well. All of you work. Even if you're retired, I still know you work. So work meaning you do things, even if you're not getting paid for it. You sleep. Let's keep it at that for the moment. So another way of saying, you know, adding to description of what meditation is that when you are doing something, you're doing that. And in essence, that's what you're doing. You're not doing, you know, again, there's kind of the rule of thumb, try to do one thing at a time. You know, it doesn't seem to have come up a lot lately in our culture, but we're not multitasking. So when you're eating, having breakfast, just have breakfast. And I remember one woman coming up to me at Shasta Abbey. She was kind of confused about doing one thing at a time. If you watch a really young kid, you know, eating food's actually a fairly complex task. Scooping out your food in a spoon and actually getting it in your mouth. And then what do you do once it's in your mouth? But it's one thing in the sense of it's you're having breakfast. The fact that it's complicated, it's not too complicated for most of us nowadays, but that's the one thing you're doing. And for those of you who've been on retreat at Shasta Abbey, during the work periods, most of the stuff that you're doing is very, very straightforward. A really big thing, which I think it is somewhat to this day, is, you know, we'd have these large deliveries of firewood, do a lot of heating with wood. They'd dump, you know, the pickup trucks would just dump it, big pile, and then a lot of the work we do is be stacking the wood in an undercover. Or it would be sweeping, you know, or vacuuming, or cleaning a bathroom or something in the monastery. Again, they're intricate in the sense there are lots of things that we do in those processes. But again, it's just doing one thing. We're stacking firewood, or sweeping the cloister, or vacuuming, and so on. And the really important thing is that that's what we're doing. That's the reality of what's going on at that time. So that's the, another way of describing that is that's the object of meditation. That's the object, i.e. not the objective, but the object, and that's the focus of the meditation is the vacuuming, the sweeping, the having breakfast, and so on. And what's helpful with saying it that way is that there are thoughts that come to mind that are important in terms of doing the actual task at hand. sometimes we have to sort of, in our minds, get a sense of what should I do first and how should I move through this process. That's the using of the mind. And obviously the mind's being used, okay, that's where the carpet ends, and beyond that I don't need a vacuum. Those are legs of very nice tables or benches. I don't want to be smashing the vacuum cleaner into it, and so on. But again, the fact that we noticed outside the kitchen what the menu was for the day, and they're serving pizza for lunch, and it's still morning, and we're all excited about pizza, okay, that thought will come to mind. It's not actually relevant to vacuuming right now. And that again is a very simple example, and we need to kind of take it back within our own context, our own lives. But there needs to be this, okay, that isn't needed for the meditation of vacuuming. That isn't needed for the being with what's going on right now. Therefore, it's like I notice it, and we try not to hold on to it. We use the task at hand to kind of focus back into that. In a monastery, primarily, and to a lesser degree in a priory, certainly in a monastery, you work in different departments, and depending on the department, you always have a department head. You might have another number of monks working there, and the department head is very much asking you to do specific things. And yes, there are things that need to be done for the life of the community, but they're also an extremely valuable way for the department head, who's a senior monk, to see how you're doing the job and noticing if you're actually doing the job, in the sense of there are some very, very comical stories about certain monks who had certain tendencies to go off daydreaming and so on even while they were working. And particularly there were a couple of, this is going back way back into the early 70s, where there'd be some head cooks who were more interested in a good book than cooking the meal, and come to find out that no, lunch wasn't going to be ready when it was actually scheduled. Those are some extreme examples. But again, it's all kind of focusing back to, that's the core of the practice, is just trying to be there in your life with what you're sensing and so on, and with what you're doing. And perhaps, I think this was the case with me to some degree, because we have a mind, and because the ability of the mind is to be able to sort of come up with things that don't have to do with what's going on right now, we get really attracted to that. There's a real kind of stimulating aspect to that. And I'll get to it here in a minute, but we also need to look at this practice in the context of the fact that many of the jobs that we do have require us to do a lot of thinking and using the mind in particular ways, which actually fundamentally for this practice isn't a problem. Again, it's just a matter of, kind of being clear on things and how to make use of things in a proper way, and when to put it down, when it's not needed. But because the objects of the mind can be very alluring and very enticing, that's an area where we, you know, we just need to bring some extra care and attention to it. So what would normally happen for a younger monk, and by saying that I'm meaning, so what's appropriate, helpful for us when we're younger in our training, newer in our training. So for example, when there are certain activities you're doing during your day, perhaps like eating breakfast, or eating a meal, or maybe even better yet, maybe there are, you know, if you've got a family or you're living with other people, maybe there are certain times during the day when it's quieter than other times. We'll use that time to, it's like, okay, now I'm going to do some cleaning meditation. Maybe on a regular basis, there's time when you go for a walk, you know, get some exercise. Again, kind of think of that as a time when you can bring meditation to it. This is my walking meditation now. This is my pedaling on the stationary bicycle meditation. And again, kind of bring that mind forward, which is, I'm going to try to pay a little more attention to this. I'm going to try to bring a little more mindfulness or awareness to this. This is my time, particularly for all of you who have, actually all of us do, when we have busy days, either things that we're doing or busy because just, you know, number of people are around with their lives and their activities. Realize when you have that quiet time, that's a real time where it's like, okay, this is somewhere where I can actually practice, cultivate this training more. This is just what I'm going to do right now. And it may only be for 15 minutes or, you know, a short period of time. You're not going to get to do it leisurely all day long. And then just, okay, for the next 15 minutes, I'm going to do bathroom cleaning meditation. I'm going to be fully present with, I'm going to be in my life doing this. And just bring that awareness to what I'm feeling, what I'm seeing, sensing, etc. Possibly because of the nature of modern life these days being, to my mind, fairly busy. Busy in the sense of there's kind of an intensity about it, or there's just kind of this push to it, kind of needing to get this done and then on with the next thing. What's also particularly helpful in our practice is actually slow it down. Part of the deliberateness is doing it like at 90% speed instead of 100%. And just take your time to just sort of sense, dare I say, savor what's actually going on. So two things come to mind to pay attention to also. So we have two very significant aspects of our mind, one of which is the capacity to remember things that happened in the past, you know, either distantly or just yesterday. That's actually a big aspect of our mind. There's another aspect of our mind that's very geared towards constantly looking ahead and asking, what's next? What's next? What's next? When we're doing a lot of thinking with our jobs, whatever they might have to be. What it also does, that aspect of our minds that's used for thinking, it's the same mind, or it's making use of that mind, that's always thinking about what's next. So one of the dangers or the risks with that, or one of the things that comes with that, is that when we do a lot of thinking, we just kind of sort of really stimulate that part of us that's like, okay, what's next? What's next? What's next? And at some point, hopefully towards the end of the day, you can tell yourself, okay, we don't have to worry about what's next at this point. We can put it down. And I have noticed over and over and over again with, for example, like the treasury work I do, which requires greater and lesser amounts of thinking, is that it builds up. I think of it as like this flywheel, this big flywheel that gets going faster and faster and faster. And I'm like, okay, I've finished that job. I don't have to do any more treasury work today. Yay. But that flywheel in the mind is still moving. It's still like, okay, what's next? What's next? And that can take some time to kind of calm down. It can take up a good chunk of my evening meditation for that flywheel to slow down to the point where I'm like, okay, I've just switched from concern about what's next to actually, oh, now I'm actually here, present with sitting and what I'm experiencing right now. So just note that. Keep that in mind. It just means that when we're doing work that requires thinking, that's just kind of the nature of it. And we need to, you know, basically learn how to transition out of that to kind of coming back more towards being here and now, and just experiencing our life right now with our feet on the ground. I would say probably similar things about sort of that aspect of mind, that, you know, that memory part that's always casting back to things that happened in the past. That oftentimes is characterized by, we can get very emotional. You know, we'll have strong emotional reactions to that. And it has sort of a similar, we can get really caught up in, I don't know, complaining about or being upset about the things that happened in our past and so on. But in each of those cases, about kind of that underlying mechanism or habit of what's next or this happened in my past, in both those cases, you can still, if you can just actually be fully mindful and present with that, as, you know, it's almost kind of a taking a step back instead of being just completely absorbed in the, you know, the what's next, the thinking, or being fully kind of pulled away by or sucked into the feelings, the emotions. You can take a step back from that in the sense of, be aware of that, be mindful of that, notice that's actually part of, in your six senses, what's going on right now. I guess one of the things to add to this is, so most of the time, well, again, it's important for you, each one of you, to feel out kind of what your life is like and what the rhythms of the day are like and the degree to which you want to do this practice, in the sense that perhaps, you know, once a day just doing the seated meditation is really, really helpful. Maybe you can incorporate some other period of time during the day where you're doing a more active meditation. It's already a given, hopefully, that when we're meditating, like in the hall, well, it's quiet in the sense of we're not creating any additional sounds. Obviously, there's the traffic we hear, etc. Each one of us shuffling about. But also, too, in terms of the way we do things in the monastery, is that it's quite fascinating. You'll have a whole room filled with people, and we're all quietly eating breakfast. We don't do that all the time. There are certain, you know, the last meal of the day at Throssell was you were welcome to visit with each other, chat with each other. But then again, like during working meditation, working in your department, you kind of just do that. And, you know, now every now and then you have to, it's like, okay, I've done this, what do I do now? Or something of that sort. So there's communicating is needed, but then one again goes back to, you just kind of gently and quietly and perhaps a little bit more slowly doing what's right in front of you. So try to bring those examples to bear during your day, and particularly in maybe once or twice during the day where you're very specifically saying, this is going to be my time to actually be fully where I am and be doing what I'm really doing. For some reason, what came to my mind when I was meditating just briefly was, and this is an area that I've been interested in and involved in off and on in my life, but it's been going on for decades now, but back in the Midwest, sort of the farming belt, the food basket of America, I think, you know, anybody who looks into this, but, you know, back pre-World War II and for a little while after World War II, our rural farming communities were just thriving. And we were the breadbasket of the world in terms of what we produce. But what happened as post-World War II, in particular, as things just got more modern, you would invariably bump into kids of farmers, and they're like, oh God, this is such a boring life. And so you get, for decades now, you've been getting these migrations of farming communities going into the cities. And I'll still remember a sibling of mine who, you know, for decades lived in the Bay Area, and I remember visiting her, and she and her husband were like, oh, we just love this lifestyle. Just always on the go and always things to do. And now, perhaps contrary to how I used to think about that in the past, neither of those ways of living is fundamentally a problem. But if we're not aware of practice and how Buddhism says that we need to interact with our senses and how we interact with our, you know, the things that arise within our senses, if we're not aware that the practice of being fully present, you know, standing on your own two feet and actually being aware of what you're actually experiencing right now, if we're not aware that that's actually the doorway, that's actually the gateway to this deeper reality or deeper experiencing that Buddhism talks about, if we're not aware of that, there's going to be this tendency to get kind of hijacked or excited about sensory stimulation. And hence, people will start migrating towards things, either migrating within their own way of living their life, or literally migrating to the city or something, without realizing that the doorway is always there. And it's there right where you're standing, or right where you're sitting, within your six senses and how you are with those things. You know, each and every one of us has this precious human life, and if we're fortunate enough, it's pointed out to us, shown to us, that whatever situation you're in, whatever life you're in, if you just keep coming back to the experiencing through your senses of that life right now, and keep cultivating that over time, that's the doorway, that's the gateway. And what unfolds in doing that is what's described in the very last line of Rules for Meditation, which were Great Master Dogen's teaching on how to do this practice, how to meditate. He says, if you do these things for some time, you will become as herein described, and then the treasure house will open naturally, and you will enjoy it fully. And that's why it's a precious human life, because we're actually standing at the doorway to the treasure house. And we open it by just coming back to what's really here, what's really right now, what we're really doing. Now, let's see, one sort of final area to touch on, just sort of more touch on it, highlight that that's there. There may be a concern that we have that if we really kind of keep cultivating this capacity, ability, this habit to just be present right where we are, come back to the life we're living right now, there may be this concern that what about the fact that we need to plan for the future? What about decisions we need to make and so on, that have to do with things that are going to happen in the future? One of the enjoyable things that happened on Wednesday with the book group meeting was that we talked about towards the tail end how when you're doing this practice of simply being with what you're doing, and what goes hand in hand with that is that there's a certain kind of spaciousness or leisure or relaxedness about doing that. Because we're not worried about, oh, I've got all these other chores I need to do after this one, but we're just giving ourselves fully to right now, is that we actually open ourselves up to, and this was kind of the topic that I went into last week, is that we're opening ourselves up to actually understanding, receiving information from the context that we're in right at the time. When we actually are there present, just simply washing the dishes, sweeping the floor, vacuuming, and so on, you will find, if you haven't already, you will find that things start getting kind of different when you do that. Because what we're doing is, by actually fully being present with an aspect of the universe, namely the dirty dishes, we're actually opening ourselves up to being fully present with everything. And so if we're not worried about the past, and we're not at the moment getting concerned about what next, and we're just simply there over and over again, and this was what was fun on Wednesday, was that people would talk about how things would just come to mind. It's like, oh yeah, I needed to wash that dish towel. I need to quick put that into the laundry too, before I close the door and turn the machine on. Or, oh yeah, there was that other bit I needed to quickly sweep. So by joining, by being fully present with any given task, we're actually opening ourselves up to and being present to everything and the everything that's unfolding. And so the everything that's unfolding will actually be quote-unquote talking to us. It will be informing us, letting us know what's in the offing. What I did after everyone left from the community work day yesterday, and you know, I kind of put tools away, tidy up and stuff as I walked out to the main area. And I was just walking out there, just being there. And then it's like, oh, I noticed probably like 4 or 5-ish branches that were still there. You know, so I just picked them up and took them over to the pile. And so it's almost like when we're not deliberately trying to be aware of something specific, but are just more just being present with the situation, things will just come to mind. It's like, oh yeah, oh, there's that there. I was thinking of trucking it out today. I came across an article on, they've started preliminary research, studies of people who are now incorporating AI into their work more and more. And they're finding that, as somebody said, you know, in the past, computers don't need to sleep. They're on constantly. You know, so what you're accessing with AI, you can access it 24/7. And so there's a tendency for people using AI, because of that constant availability, to just kind of keep going with it and keep forging ahead during their workday. But they found that people who do that, who actually every hour take about a 5-minute break, they're actually more productive at the end of the day than those who just like plow through it all. And part of it has to do with the fact that when we're focused on that, using that mind that's like next, that's a very focused way of looking at things. And so by taking a 5-minute break, it doesn't even have to be 5 minutes, it's like just taking a break, stepping away from that. Go get yourself a cup of tea. Go look out the window. When we do that, we connect with the bigger picture again. We can only do one thing at a time. We can either be open to just everything, or we can be focused on a specific thing. So oftentimes when we step away from the work at hand, the thinking work at hand, even for a little while, it's like, oh yeah, I need to bring that particular aspect back into it. Or, wait a minute, I don't need to go this far in this direction, I can actually change, and that's enough in that area, now we need to go in this area. Things of that sort. So, I mean, I'll say it again, but it's sort of like, rest assured that you're not going to, it's not going to become a problem if you cultivate, you know, being present with your life. You know, if you start cultivating that even a little bit more in your day than you have been, you'll still be fully functional. Rev. Master Jiyu actually said that somebody who starts incorporating meditation into their life, she would say, she's not around so I can't kind of tease her about this, but she said, you're actually going to become twice as efficient as you are now. Maybe that was one of those enticements to try to get people to meditate more. So my hope was that in saying it the way I did was that you'll see that pretty much everything you do during your day is amenable to actually being present with doing whatever you're doing during your day. And if there are any fine tunings or queries you might have about anything you do during the day, please feel free to bring those up. Okay, that's what I had for this morning.